Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, an incredibly insightful and, I believe, helpful hour with James Lindsay and Michael O'Fallon. We talk about Yuval Harari. We ask the question of, what do they actually want? The World Economic Forum, who is they? We talk about many different aspects with Davos. I encourage you to listen to this and take notes. I certainly learned a lot. Email me directly, freedom@charliekirk.com. Get involved today with Turning Point USA. Turning Point USA is the nation's largest organization dedicated to fighting for freedom, liberty, and American exceptionalism. If you are in high school, I encourage you to start a Turning Point USA high school chapter today at tpusa.com. If you're in college, start a college chapter at tpusa.com. Turning Point USA is on the front lines doing the hard, difficult, but necessary work. We are doing the work, so go to tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the Loan Experts I Trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. I'm so excited for this hour. I'm going to learn a lot. I have my notepad and my pen ready. Two extraordinarily smart people and clear thinkers. First, we have Michael O'Fallon, who is a frequent guest now on our program from Sovereign Nations. And then James Lindsay from New Discourses, also the author of a fabulous book, Race Marxism, and also a new book on education that I can't remember the title of, but he'll tell it to you, I'm sure, in a second. James Lindsay and Michael O'Fallon, welcome back to the program.
Good to be here, Charlie. Thanks, Charlie.
So we're going to talk about the World Economic Forum in Davos all throughout this hour. Michael, I think it would be helpful for you to kind of walk our audience through what is the World Economic Forum. You have participated in these type of globalist gatherings. You've had a kind of a firsthand, let's just say, experience. Who are they? What are they trying to achieve? What are their motives?
Well, back in the 1960s and early 1970s, you had this push to try to start a revolution. When it wasn't able to be sparked, you had folks such as Rudi Dutschke and others that looked back to Gramsci, and as well, Herbert Marcuse, that basically said, what you really need to have is a long march through the institutions. If you're going to have a communist revolution, if you're going to have a neo-communist revolution that we're experiencing today, or a neo-communo-fascist, enviro-communo-fascist revolution, you're going to want to have a whole of participation of all society. There cannot be one organization or pillar that does not participate in the revolution. So you need to make sure that you're integrating yourself within corporations. You have to integrate yourself within governments. You have to integrate yourself within faith. You have to integrate yourself within culture and the media and so forth to ensure that you have a pathway to be able to infuse the rest of the world really with the critical concepts that you have that mean that you need to destruct what was. Out with the old culture and in with a new culture as you transform our world and Western civilization into the vision that you have for the future, which is a vision without family. It's a vision without profit, without really capitalism as we know it. It's a vision where everything within society is controlled, a technocratic revolution. And as well, it's a revolution to where you have each and every thought captive, if you will. I mean, back in the Bible, we say every thought captive. Mm-hmm. But everything that we know, everything that we see, there is no privacy that it is understood by some central authority. And once again, that authority can be managed. So if you're looking to have a very successful society, a wonderful civilization that was being built, where people were able to really pursue their dreams, no matter what their dreams may be, what you do is you truncate those dreams and you say, no, we know better for you and all of society for the common good. And so what you start to turn to are plans and visions that will bring you to a point where you have a central control authority that's saying, you know, we need to have a managed economy to get rid of booms and bust cycles. We need to have a managed faith that gets rid of radicalism that really has a common cause for all of society. Mm. We need to make sure that everybody has the same mind and the same thing to get rid of war. We need to be in the minds of men. That's really what you see happening in the culmination of what's happening in Davos.
Very quickly, Michael, then I'm going to get to James. Who is they? Who are these people?
Well, you think you'd take a look at a number of folks. You would look at Klaus Schwab. Klaus Schwab is the one that famously brought forth the concept of stakeholder capitalism, which is not capitalism at all. It's neo-communism. And what it's saying is that all these wonderful things that capitalism has built up, corporations, travel, all these things where people are making money for their, for themselves and for their family, what you want to do with that is you want to harness that energy and you want to make those things purpose-driven for the sake of sustaining the future of transhumanism and as well transforming us into the vision of a neo-communist fascist society.
James, you have done, I think, the most work of any person on the planet understanding the philosophy and the history behind these ideas. I'm just going to let you riff here. The floor is yours.
All right. Well, let's see what we can do. I just add a little bit to what Michael said to start off. The World Economic Forum is a club, is what it really boils down to. It's a who's who, elbow rubbing, networking up club where elites in industry realize that they could rub elbows with elites in politics, global governance, and they can create plans and partnerships and commitments to one another to be able to do this thing. So to participate in the networking club, you have to participate by the networking club's rules. And so what it is it's the strategic arm of this long march revolution that Michael was talking about to get the corporations on board and to get the corporations in partnership with governance and to get governance in partnership with other governors or governments so that these governments become something more and more like a one world government. That's probably being facilitated by the now explicit partnership between the World Economic Forum and the United Nations. But the goal is to, if you read their documents, as you should, they're pushing now more and more toward what they're calling global citizenship model. And they're telling you that to be a global citizen means that you're satisfying and working to achieve the sustainable development goals, the SDGs of the United Nations Agenda 2030. So sustainable becomes kind of the watchword of neo-communism. It is the magic term. It is the tyranny of the 21st century. And really, if we are a little bit creative with how we understand how they use language, we understand that sustainable means sustainable agenda for them, sustainable power for them. And so everything that Michael said explains what's happening. But when he brought up Herbert Marcuse, for example, in the 1960s, this is where people get lost. People understand the idea now generally of communism, and they know that it hates corporations. And so then they see the banks and the corporations participating in this thing, and they say, well, it can't be communism. What they don't understand are the developments from Herbert Marcuse in the United States, and who's a member of the Frankfurt School, the critical Marxist movement in the 1950s and 60s and 70s. And they don't understand the developments in Deng Xiaoping, who is the Chinese leader that took over in the wake of Mao Zedong. Deng Xiaoping very famously said, I don't care if the cat is black or white as long as it catches mice. So he doesn't care how the society is going to be organized. Is it going to be purely communist? Is it going to be purely capitalist? It doesn't matter as long as it produces and maintains a system of control. That's what he means. Herbert Marcuse said, well, capitalism, advanced capitalism in the West gave people a better life. They're stable. They're conservative. They're counter-revolutionary. They will never submit to a Marxist revolution. So let's march into the institutions. He said, we have to go in and counter revolution and revolt. He said, we have to go into the institutions. We have to go in and do the job. We become computer programmers and program computers, but we bring our ideology with us. We bring our Marxism with us and infect those institutions from within by changing the policy, by changing the culture within to create that Gramscian counter hegemony that will cause the institution to serve the neo-communist agenda. Neo-communism accepts capitalism as a means to its end, which seems a little strange, but capitalism's a misnomer. What they're actually after are property rights. Mm. They want nobody to have property rights. You will own nothing. You will be happy. Everything you have, you will rent, and it will be delivered by drone, just like the World Economic Forum told us in 2016. They've had other meetings where they explained, well, it doesn't make sense. You don't want the product, they tell us. You want the benefit of the product. So why don't we keep the product and we'll lease you the product so you can obtain what you actually want, which is the benefit of the product, in a more sustainable model. We don't have to produce as much. We won't waste as much. We'll have a circular economy where we consume our waste like a snake eating its own tail. These are the models that they're actually putting forth for this future. And it will be managed by, as Michael said, the stakeholders who are the experts who understand climate change and climate action and inclusion and sustainability and diversity and equity better than you, better than everybody. And what they have to do is just take away your property rights, including the right to your own body, as we learned through the pandemic. They're going to take away your property rights in order to manage your life better for you and for everybody.
That is just the surface. And that's really well put, James. What you just said there is so interesting. Private property is what they're after. And I've been saying for many years, and it just doesn't seem to resonate with audiences because it sounds a little too abstract. You cannot have liberty without private property rights. It's impossible. They are tied together. If you are not able to defend what you own, the fruits of your labor, your consciousness, your time, your energy, you do not have liberty, period. And boy, has that been a focus of theirs. And I believe it is a focus. That is why they're so focused on environmentalism. Environmentalism is a means to the end to be able to obliterate private property rights. Hey, everybody, Charlie Kirk here. It's not unusual to ignore danger and simply hope that will go away. But friends, the coming food shortages are not a joke. Experts are saying they'll last weeks, even months. Problem is, most people have only 1 week's of food at home. That's why the prudent thing to do is to get emergency food right now while you can. So go to preparewithkirk.com and you'll save $200 on a 3-month emergency food kit from My Patriot Supply, the nation's largest preparedness company. Be sure to get at least one kit per person in your family so you don't run out. Since you'll save $200 per kit, stock up today. Tomorrow might be too late. These kits are in stock and shipping is free. Everything arrives in unmarked boxes for your privacy. Get your emergency food today and sleep better tonight. Go to preparewithkirk.com. They're a fabulous company. My family uses them. We are prepared for what is coming next. Things might start falling apart very soon. Are you prepared? Go to preparewithkirk.com. James, continue on that. Why is private property so critical to freedom or liberty? And what are they trying to achieve by abolishing private property rights?
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up, Charlie, because this is the essence of America. This is really has to be understood. This is the essence of America. Thomas Jefferson wrote in the Declaration of Independence that we have inalienable rights granted by our creator, among them life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Where did he come up with this strange phrase, pursuit of happiness? Well, if you go back and read John Locke, who he was very familiar with, one of the great liberal thinkers who didn't get everything right, got some issues with that blank slate for sure.
Tabula
but we go
rosa.
Back and read, yeah, tabula rasa, not so good. But we go back and we read, what did Locke say? He said that it's actually life, liberty, and property that have to be secured to secure liberty. And property allows for the pursuit of happiness. So that's the origin of that peculiar phrase in the Declaration of Independence at the heart of the American experiment. And what John Locke realized is that if they can deprive you of your life, or they can deprive you of your liberty. So if they can kill you or jail you, or they can deprive you of your property so you can't house yourself, feed yourself, clothe yourself, take care of yourself, then they can control how you think, how exactly you believe, right, how you worship, whatever they want, actually. And so those three rights must be inalienable to a free people for those people to stay free. And we don't have this new neo-communist agenda is compared with, say, the Bolsheviks in Russia or the communists under Mao is a little bit passive aggressive. It's not coming out and attempting to show power flowing from the barrel of a gun. It's not eagerly. It is locking up some people like the J6 attendees, but it's not going and depriving lots of people of their liberty. What it is doing is very subtly removing and subverting their right to private property, yeah, exactly their rights right. property at all, so that they can force you to opt into your own tyranny rather than be forced into it in kind of old, cruder methods.
The passive-aggressive way of describing it is so correct. Opt into your own tyranny. It's brilliant. Michael, why does private property matter so much? And it seems as if it's the central point of all of this. This is why they want to have carbon emission standards, 15-minute cities. Walk us through your take on the moral necessity of private property.
Well, there's a number of things when we talk about private property, and James is correct. As soon as you remove the aspect of personal possession or personal ownership of something, is that then they can have control because they are the ones that then can decide whether you need something or not. Do you need that 3-bedroom house with 2 bathrooms and an acre worth of land, or really is all that you really need from our understanding for the greater common good is a room with a bed and a bathroom. That's all you really need. And we can have a common place that you can eat, and we will provide the food for you. So what you end up doing is ceding control. I think the other aspect of this as well is generational wealth. So if you're going to break the stream of generational wealth or familial wealth, which you would be handing down to your descendants, is that if all of a sudden you're taking away private property, what is it that one generation is going to hand down to the other? All of a sudden, that's going to disappear if that becomes communal. And that's exactly what happened in China, is that in China, there is no ownership of property. There are long-term leases, but that's not something that then I'm going to then hand down to my to the next generations and to my progeny. So what you're doing is really breaking a cycle, not only with capitalism and the concept of liberty that James was referring to, but you're also beginning
that's
to
exactly
destroy
right.
family.
And it also breaks what is a, which is one of the great advances of Western society, which is a preference on delayed gratification. Which is
correct.
If there's nothing, if there's no reason to pass it down, why sacrifice today? Just indulge. And
right.
this idea of patience and of generational improvement is why one of not the only reason, but one of the main reasons why the West has been just an incredible success up until recently. Your thoughts on this idea of delayed gratification?
Well, actually, I want to talk about the how they're subverting your property rights. If you own a car and they can turn it off remotely, they tell you you can only drive 15 minutes from your house 100 days a year, and you violate that, they turn your car off. Mm-hmm. We laughed when the Russians stole all those tractors from the Ukrainians and they disabled them remotely. That's horrifying. We saw it in the Canadian protests, and it was horrifying. You have your money. You can spend your money on whatever you want, right? No, not if it's a digital currency that they turn into coupons and vouchers. What they're going to do is allow you to pretend you have your property when they retain the ownership and thus the control over it. And they will control how you can use it, when you can use it, where you can use it. So in fact, you appear or feel like you have property rights, but you don't. You have a megaphone, you have a Twitter account or whatever. Yeah, get on YouTube. But if you don't follow all of our community guidelines, we'll silence you. They give you the illusion of property that they actually own and control, and you opt in order to be able to play because it's convenient.
It's a mirage. Hey everybody, Charlie Kirk here, the inventor and CEO of MyPillow. Mike Lindell is always looking for ways to solve everyday problems. Have you ever picked up a towel set because it felt really soft in the store, but then when you go to use it, it's not very absorbent? It's basically a towel that's leaving you out to dry. That's why MyPillow has developed the MyPillow Towels, towels that work. I know it's mind-blowing, towels that actually dry you. The six-piece towel set that includes two bath towels, two hand towels, and two washcloths. They come in a variety of colors, and right now you can receive a six-piece set for only $39.98 with promo code Kirk. Go to MyPillow.com right now and click on the Radio Listener Special. MyPillow products come with a 10-year warranty and have their 60-day money-back guarantee. To receive this amazing offer on the six-piece set of MyPillow towels, go to MyPillow.com and click on the Radio Listener Special and use promo code Kirk. That's MyPillow.com. Use promo code Kirk or call 800-875-0425. That is MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk. So, James, I'll start with you. The World Economic Forum elite, let's say John Kerry, does he believe he is doing good, or is he sociopathic, like, I'm doing evil, I want to tear the world apart? I'm asking for a reason, but our audience largely said, no, these people think they're doing evil, and they acknowledge it. I don't know if I agree. I think they've convinced themselves that what they are doing is the righteous thing. Your thoughts, James?
Well, I want to know how weird I can get with this, because if we accept the premise that these folks are Gnostic cultists, which I think is a necessary condition to understand
and elaborate
what they are,
walk us
and what
that.
They do.
Yes.
If we accept the proposition that these folks believe that they have secret hidden knowledge about how the world really works, what it's supposed to be, that in some sense, kind of, if we talk about it in a religious sense, that they've seen an image of the mind of God and that they have a bigger plan for everybody, then the answer to your question is yes, they are both evil and think they're doing good at the same time. And they think they're doing good, but are knowingly doing evil, because in that faith, the Gnostics have a different set of rules than everybody. They know the mind of God and you don't. And so they get to behave how they will, and they deserve to profit off of it, which is where we start to see the kind of evil aspects. As a matter of fact, in the Corpus Hermeticum, they explain that people who have the nous, the mind or the gnosis, get to do evil while escaping the effects of evil because they have a greater understanding. We call that understanding usually the greater good. If they're working for the greater good, they can do things that are harmful in the moment because they know the deeper, more important thing down the road. And they also deserve to profit off of it, even if it's exploitative, because they're the ones who understand, and all of us plebs do not understand and need to be managed for our own good. I not only think this explains all of their theory that they've written for hundreds of years, but I also think it singularly explains their behavior, their attitude, the way they talk to us, the way they tell us they need stakeholders to manage us for us. We're not the stakeholders, even though we have a stake in their decisions. We don't get to vote. We don't have a say. They have to have experts that they hand select. Well, those are people with the gnosis or with the nose, with the mind. They've seen the light and they get to behave and act differently. So the answer is they think they're doing good, but they get to be evil in the process, and they're justified in doing so and deserve to be paid for it.
Michael, I want to get your reaction to this clip here. I believe this all comes back down to Genesis 1 through 11. And James and I have talked about this in great detail, which is they want to eliminate distinctions, especially the distinction of God and man. This is not some sort of theory. It's not some sort of, we don't have to go on some archaeological hunt to figure it out. No, this is Yuval Harari, senior advisor to Klaus Schwab, saying, we need to turn humans into God. Play 19.
The next big projects of humankind will be to overcome old age and death, to find the keys, the secret to happiness, and to basically upgrade humans into gods. And I don't mean it as a kind of literary metaphor. I mean it in the literal sense.
Michael, the literal sense that we can become gods.
Well, you think about this from the Christian perspective, is that in Christianity, we understand that we have God who is not made, who has made all things. Mm. And then in terms of our relationship with the Lord himself, is that he has made the sacrifice. And by having faith in that sacrifice that he made for us and the provision that it makes for us, is that then he indwells us. It is his imputation of his Holy Spirit that's within us that then gives us life and allows us to live life in the way that we should. What they're believing is they're actually turning this around. So they're saying, no, we, man, are going to build God, and then we will build God in such a way, as you were referring to Genesis 1 through 11, is that we ourselves are going to participate in the building of an omnipotent, omnipresent, sovereign being who knows all things, who can think all things, that can think a million times faster than a human being. He knows when you've been naughty, he knows when you've been awake, so you better be good for goodness sake. And then along with that, the transitioning of us humans, and that's what a lot of this is about. It's not just an economic model, but it is the transforming of human beings into the next stage of evolution, transhumanism, basically a merging of us with that artificial intelligence that is the building of God himself.
James.
If I might, I'll just do something a little strange. I want to read a short passage from a Hermetic religious scripture called the Poimandres, which is the first book of the Corpus Hermeticum. It says, just kind of cutting in here, it says, then in due order, they ascend to the Father and they surrender themselves to the powers, and becoming the powers, they are merged in God. This is the end, the supreme good for those who have had the higher knowledge to become God. Well, then, why do you delay? Should you not, having received all, become the guide to those who are worthy, so that the human race may be saved by God through you? That's their religious scripture. And when I hear John Kerry talk, or I hear Yuval Noah Harari talk, and we just saw, I hear that now. Once I've read the scripture and imbibed it and understood it, and understand where this mindset comes from and goes, that's what I see. And I do believe that it is the attempt to elevate us out of this pathetic human coil and move into an ethereal digital kind of metaverse universe, that eventually we become one internet of uploaded consciousnesses that's kind of astral in its projection. And then we can have a full phenomenology of spirit and return to spirit, and God. And I actually looked through an arc of history. I've invoked Hegel. I've invoked the Corpus Hermeticum, which predates Plato, to kind of make this statement that says, this is what Yuval Noah Harari was talking about. This is what Michael is describing. And this is the project that the World Economic Forum has undertaken. And that's why it's so important to understand where they think they're taking us.
I mean, and James, I've done a serious amount of reflecting, meditating and researching since our conversation that we had at America Fest just about a month ago, where you introduced, and we spent about an hour and we really dialed this in. So if anyone's interested, they should just check out that podcast. That was really deep. And you explained what is Hermeticism, you explained what is Gnosticism, and it made sense. But it also, I thought to myself, so here are the world's most powerful people that are vesting their end game in wizardry.
Mm-hmm.
Is that fair to say, James?
I think that's the only way to understand what's happening, that they're casting the world they wish to see like a spell upon us and getting us to agree to it until we're trapped in it. I think that's the only way to understand what's actually happening. And if you don't, it's like you have the ocean and you're playing around in the reflections on the surface. You talk about their theories, the details of CRT, the details of queer theory, the details of Marxism. You talk about it as an economic or political theory or a social theory, and you're dabbling around on the surface Yes. of a deep, deep ocean with deep rip currents that are going to drag us under and kill us.
In a very, and I said this on the podcast and I've said it since, and I had some very angry emails from some pastors and some very good emails from some pastors. That's how I know I'm saying something that is probably true, where I said it is more I'm more okay with somebody who says they don't believe in God than somebody who thinks they are God. In a strange way, James, you know, you're agnostic and you do appreciate the Bible and you're very honest about your metaphysical beliefs, but there's actually an opportunity for those of us, Michael, you're a Christian and I'm a Christian, and James, at the very least, we aren't Hermeticists and we aren't Gnostics, and we can unify to destroy this ideology. Michael, your thoughts?
Well, I think, first of all, it's rather jihadic in the way that they're doing this. And so what you see as well is to see the transformation of men who have been trusted with their faith. I'm not just talking about within Christianity. I'm talking about within Islam. We're talking about within the Baha'i faith. You're talking about within various other forms of faith that have all basically bowed their knee for the cause and purposes of forwarding this. Now, whenever they're confronted with their forwarding of intersectionality, critical race theory, all the different tools or means to achieve what James has been talking about, they always deny and say, oh, no, we're not doing that, and so forth. It's the same thing like when you confront people in education. But the fact is that people have been lying to you for decades as they've been introducing these ideas that are ecumenical in nature, because the ecumenism really is centered upon critical social justice, a way of thinking that we're going to free the world or better the world, as opposed to bringing the gospel, let's say, from our context.
All right, I want to play another piece of tape here, and one of you guys can help me understand this. This is one, and I know the Bible teaching really well, but I'm not exactly sure what he means by this. So I'm going to need some sort of a translator. Play cut 18, Yuval Harari saying that scientists will build a Noah's Ark for the elite, leaving the rest to drown. I think I know what this means, and it would be democide. Play cut 18.
Pushes things in its own interests, even if it doesn't benefit the vast majority of the population. This has happened so many times previously in history, and it's probably going to happen again. One of the biggest dangers to the planet today is this technological utopia, because probably for the elite it will work. If bad comes to worst, and when the flood comes, the scientists will build a Noah's Ark for the elite, leaving the rest to drown, the rest of the people and then the rest of the ecosystem. But they are likely to be able to construct this technological Noah's Ark, which is probably what much of the elite is counting on.
James, what is he talking about here?
I mean, it sounds very much like what we were just discussing, but it also sounds very much like he thinks that these poly-crisis or multi-crisis or whatever the heck they're calling it now is going to destroy the whole world, and the people who deserve to will be given an out. They will be placed in a higher echelon of people, and everyone else will suffer the wailing, the gnashing of teeth, or the drowning, depending on what the nature of the disaster is. So it sounds very much like there are going to be a select group, a chosen and an elect who get to progress on to the next phase of humanity, and the rest of us, not so good. And of course, there's not a person on Earth who thinks something like that who doesn't think that they are in that elite or elect group.
Michael, 30 seconds. What's your reaction to the new Noah's Ark? Basically, is he saying a flood is coming, aka mass extinction?
Well, I would agree with what James said. This is referring to the polycrisis, where crises are becoming normative, where you're starting to have preparation for people and doing public service announcements about what happens after a nuclear blast and so forth in New York City. But as well, this idea, and this is what was introduced to me 12, 14 years ago, is that there's a change coming and there's nothing you can do to stop it. If you come on board with us and help us, things will be good for you. But if you oppose us, things will not go well for you, carrot or stick.
They capture you with the lie of inevitability. Is that there's so much inertia here. You better get on the train, not on the train tracks. And it's very persuasive. It's incredibly persuasive. James, how do we win?
One of the first things we have to understand is that there are big picture things to do and small picture things to do. Small picture, you've got to figure out what's going on in your community, your family, the things that they want to target, and you need to nourish those. You need to work in local government. You need to get to know your reps. You need to pressure your reps to do some of the bigger stuff. But you've got to nourish that family. You've got to protect your family. You've got to build your neighborhood. You've got to build your community. You've got to take care of the local stuff. And that stuff within everybody's reach. But this big stuff can't be ignored. And people get freaked out and they get nervous. And they say, what can I do about that? It's so big. It's so huge. They have so much money. They're so remote. Where is Davos on a map? I don't even know. And they don't realize that those people, this agenda depends so much on our buy-in, so much on our trust.
Yes.
That if we spread distrust of them, which they are already feeling, 5,000 Swiss guards guarding the Davos meeting this year. I've seen journalists. I've spoke with people I know on the ground there. Everybody's jumpy. Everybody's tense. They know nobody trusts them. And if we don't trust them, just like with the vaccine, like Steve Bannon said at America Fest, 50 million Americans said no. We won't repeat what exactly he said. Said no. And that threw a wrench in their works. Well, if they roll out the next thing and 50 or 100 million Americans say no, because they know what it looks like and they know what it is, it disrupts their plans. It wastes billions of their dollars. These things have rolled out over years. You waste lots of their time. It actually works, but you have to tell people, expose this thing, inform people, and get them not to trust these large entities and not to downplay the importance of the agenda that they're trying to force on us.
Early disobedience is critical. Early, early, early. I mean, we look at every major totalitarian regime. The regrets of the imprisoned, the regrets of the obliterated is always, I wish I would have done something earlier. And the interesting thing is early intervention actually can be minimal. It could be like, yeah, I'm not taking a shot. It doesn't have to be as, you know, as overwhelming as I have to now go stop trains going to gulags. Michael, how do we win?
Expose, defend, and defenestrate. So first of all, expose what's happening. Bring it to light, whether it be things that are actually happening at the World Economic Forum or within our own government, what's actually happening. I think James has done a wonderful job in exposing a lot of these things, but his secret power is that he reads what they write. He listens to what they say and then exposes it. And so many people are more caught up in what the stats were last night for their fantasy football team than what's actually happening that's disrupting and dismantling their world. So that's exposing. Defend. You need to defend the system of the United States of America. Defend our Constitution. Defend our liberties. Defend what we have and make sure that it's here for the next generation. The last thing is defenestrate, is that we need to take seriously those people that have been in charge in the corporate world, in the political world, and as well within the world of faith. Those people need to be removed from their offices. They've already shown that they were not responsible enough to take care of them. They've been participating in this. We even have Republicans that are at the World Economic Forum praising open borders and so forth as of this morning. So you need to expose, defend, and defenestrate. And that's really the only way that we get through this.
James, final thought, local matters. Make sure your family's in order. Learn, strengthen yourself. Strong people are able to resist desperate regimes. 30 seconds.
The most important thing Michael just said, with all of the important things that have been said, is the defenestrate part. I smiled when he said it. I love that word. We do have to remove people from power who have misused their power, who have abused their power, who have demonstrated that they won't be responsible. You and I talked in at America Fest about the parable of the talents. Well, they're the guy with the one bag of gold who buried it in the ground. Actually, they went and wasted it and came back and said, "Oh, master, I've got nothing." And so this is the character that the master says, throw him out, take his money and give it to somebody else. Leave him outside. These people must be removed from the power they've abused. And if you want to appeal to the gospel says so. It's right there in Matthew.
Yeah, amen. Also says it in Acts that we'll obey God, not man. God bless you both. James, phenomenal work. Michael, I wish we could have more time, but this will impact and touch our audience in a very significant way. It already has. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Email us freedom@charliekirk.com. Start a Turning Point USA chapter, tpusa.com. All eyes on Davos as the World Economic Forum continues to meet. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.